Ephesians chapter 5. We're going to be staying here for most of our lesson this evening, at least the first part of it. Glad you're here this evening. And if there's any music fans in the audience, you might be familiar with the group Sugarland. And from time to time, Sugarland will have a hit that seems to be played quite a bit. And there was one they had a few years ago called, as a matter of fact, same name as our lesson tonight, Stuck Like Glue. And you might recall that the lyricist in this song began to talk about this when he said, stuck like glue, whoa, whoa, baby, you and I are stuck like glue. Now, what that lyricist didn't realize is he's quoting the Apostle Paul, and albeit a kind of a loose translation. And certainly if you look at the music video, Sugarland didn't know what they were talking about with that. But yet that language is actually in the Bible, as we're going to see this evening. Not expressly in those words, but the exact same meaning is there. And so what we're talking about this evening is the most important relationship between a man and a woman, and that's marriage. And so this evening, lots of different groups represented. I don't know who our youngest married couple would be versus the oldest, number of years, the fewest versus the longest, but I imagine that we have them scattered from maybe 1 and 2 on up to 10 and 15, 50, 60 years. But one thing that we understand is that with marriage, that relationship never stops growing, because if it does, trouble will set in. Even if you've been married a long time, if you start taking that relationship for granted, there's going to be difficulties. And so this evening, I'd like to talk to you about that idea. And like for us to look at what the Apostle Paul has to say, and then look at some of the things toward the end of our lesson that tend to put stress on the relationship, make it difficult at times, and to talk about those. But to begin with, let's go ahead and think about what the Apostle here is talking about when he is telling us the relationship as described here in Ephesians chapter 5. Now, I want to say a couple of things about this passage. We oftentimes will say that this is the Apostle Paul's teaching on marriage. This is actually the Apostle Paul's teaching on Jesus and the church. That's his primary point. And what he does in this is he compares the relationship that Christ has with the church to the relationship that a man has with his wife. Sometimes we think that Ephesians chapter 5 is dealing primarily with the woman. That too is incorrect. This passage is dealing almost exclusively with the man and his relationship. The apostle will start off with a brief mention to the woman, but then almost the remainder of the section on marriage is going to be talking about the man's role in this. So what we're finding is the idea that Paul is referring to here concerning what's involved in making this marriage work, like the relationship between Jesus and the church works. Let's read it together. We're here beginning in verse 22, and he'll talk to wives first, as we said. And he says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to everything in everything to their husbands." Now verse 25, we pick up with the lesson to men. And he says, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that we might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of the body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." So here is a beautiful picture of the love that Jesus has for us. He says, "I want to take you and I want to treat you like a man treats his wife tenderly and compassionately. I want you to see that this is a relationship where we've come together." And the apostle says, the picture of that then, that we need to replicate in our own lives, is how a man and a woman treat each other in marriage. And what the apostle is going to focus on expressly with men is he's saying it's all going to begin with love. In fact, several times in this passage, he makes that point. But we notice specifically in verse 25, the first part of that, where he says, husbands, love your wives. And what he's saying in this, with that idea of love, is that they are everything to you. Why do we know that? Because it's the same word that's used to describe the Lord's desire for us, for our salvation. That husbands are to love their wives as Christ has loved us and given Himself for us. And so the message then is, husbands, you better love your wives just as Christ loved the church. You ever thought about the standard that's being given there? For a husband to be told that who you're looking to for your example in the way you conduct yourself with your wife is the exact same standard that Jesus has used in His relationship with us. And so here is what we're talking about. It's the idea that we have a preference for. In other words, when a man marries a woman, there are no other women in the world. He may work with women. He may have associations with women. But there are no other women in the world. Why? Because he prefers her. That bond has been sealed. And not only that, he's doing everything within his power to do the very best for her. To give that sense that her welfare is secured. That her position with him is the most important thing. That's what we're looking at here with this kind of love. But let's think a little bit further about this. As we think about the concept of love, we also have this idea of a body being formed. And what Paul says concerning Christ and the church is that Christ forms a body with believers and they're united together. So here we've got Christ being our head. We're the body joined with Him, and you don't work without that. Christ is saying, what I've done is I've brought you into my fold because of my love for you and my desire for your welfare and my desire to do the very best for you. I've made this body with you. Well, guess what Paul says in the relationship between a man and a woman? A husband forms a body with his wife. Here the two are united together. And there's lots of ramifications to that, talking about a husband and wife. Certainly you've got the physical aspect of it. But much more than that, you've got the sharing of goals. You've got the sharing of purpose. You've got the sharing of vision. Where the two now are working together to make a life, not in two different paths, but both working together with that. So here, the husband is bringing the wife into this marriage, the two of them forming this body together. Now, how does the husband treat this body? Well, how does Christ treat the church? We're told that He nourishes and He cherishes. Guess what a husband's told to do? This body is to be nourished. And the idea we have here is you're giving what's necessary to bring it to maturity. So just as you think about feeding a child, or just as you think about feeding yourself, the idea is you're doing what's good that's going to bring this body to where it needs to be, but it's not that alone. Because he also says this body is to be cherished. Again, think about what we mean here. It's the idea of you're doing everything to make it easy, comfortable. You're providing this tenderness and this care. We use it in the same sense today, don't we? If we talk about a possession we cherish, what do? With it? We treat it with a great deal of respect. We treat it, we put it in a place where it's going to be safe. Now here's something kind of interesting with these two words. We'll find each of them used only one other time in the New Testament. As we think about how they're used here, we find not too very far from where we're reading, as the apostle is telling fathers how to behave, he says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up
Exactly.
So we could easily say here, but nourish them in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Same with cherish. We've got here, but we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of. Again, same word there for cherish, her own children. And so we notice that both of these words are referring to how children are to be treated. So that begs the question then, does it? Does that mean that husbands are to treat their wives like children? And the answer to that is yes. But before you throw your songbook at me, let me explain what we mean by that. The husband has the same responsibility to his wife in the household that he has to his children in the household. Because the father, the husband, is given the job of creating this home where God is going to be honored. And as a part of that, it means that he's going to encourage spiritual growth. He's going to do that with his wife. One of the jobs a husband has is to help his wife to grow in this spiritual maturity. And we think about as well, just as a father with his children is going to promote spiritual maturity, that's what a husband is doing with his wife. He's creating an atmosphere where the conditions are right and as perfect as they can so that she can grow and mature. And he's going to create a home where it's fostering this atmosphere of spirituality. Now you look at that and what we have is the kind of home every Christian man is charged with creating. Serious business. Do you notice, if you're like me, what you've seen over the years is that oftentimes it's more of the woman doing that, isn't it? A lot of times you'll see a woman who's the one who's really making the household that way, and that's just not the way it's supposed to be. So many times men are a little derelict in their duties here, even Christian men at times. We'll think, well, I'm earning the living, I'm away from home, my wife has more time, she does this kind of thing. No, that is not the case at all. For a man to take his role in comparison to Christ's role with the church means that we are to do everything we can to make this household what it needs to be, to make this the kind of household where God is being honored and every member of it is growing. And so I would encourage all of us men here tonight who are in a marriage and raising kids that we take this extremely seriously. God has given us the responsibility for making sure that growth is occurring that's going to have eternal proportion. So thus, Paul says, you nourish and you cherish. He goes from that into a situation where he talks about the relationship of leaving and cleaving. In fact, he's going to take us all the way back to Genesis now. Isn't it interesting that Adam and Eve are formed and God says at the very beginning, you're to leave your father and mother? Well, that wasn't expressly applying to Adam and Eve, but they were representing the kind of relationship that God was expecting all of their descendants to have. That when that takes place, when that marriage occurs, that a home is being formed. So let's think about the words that we're using here. Here we find that a man is to leave his father and mother. And if you look at the definition of that word, what that actually means is you forsake them. What is that not saying? That's not saying you neglect your parents. In fact, God talks about that. He talks about how that we are to take care of those who have taken care of us. That we're to provide that love and support for our parents when they get to a point where maybe they don't have as easy a time working and providing as they once did. But here's what he means by that. The idea is the man and the woman are no longer an active part of their parents' household. They're not involved in that, and thus, a man and woman are to break away, and they are to begin a life making their own decisions. Now, does that mean you never ask your parents for advice? Well, of course not. When you've got 30, 40, 50 years of wisdom there, you certainly don't neglect that. But the idea is, they are not the authority. You now have your household that's been formed,
and the husband is leading that household, and the wife is supporting that household, and neither is running back to their parents to find out about everything and to follow that advice. Isn't it sad when families don't understand that? And you've got a married couple that just can't seem to break away from parents, or sometimes parents who just can't seem to break away from their children. And this plan that God has is not allowed to grow to what it needs to be. It's not allowed to come to fruition because the idea of forsaking is not present there. But let's look and see what else he says. He says, not only do you leave, but he also says you hold fast, which means, which is what we're talking about this evening, that you stick like glue to each other. That's what the word means. So here Paul is saying that in this marriage, when you break away from mom and dad, you cling to each other. The two are now becoming one. And this is the kind of bond that is not to be broken. Come what may, whatever the case may be, this bond is to stay perfectly intact until death do you part. So what do we find then? Here is a husband who is told, you create an atmosphere where your wife is going to grow spiritually. You create an atmosphere where you and she are making the decisions, that you are not allowing family and parents to unduly influence, but you are creating the kind of household where a bond is formed that is not going to be broken. Now, we need to get into something a little politically incorrect for a minute. What does Paul say for women? He's told husbands, I think, three times thus far, love your wives. Interesting, he doesn't tell a wife to love her husband. You ever notice that? What he says is, however, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. I don't know if by this Paul is saying women have an easier time with the love part of the relationship than men do. I kind of think that may be the case. But what he says to a woman is you respect your husband. You know what that means? Here's the incorrectness politically. That means reverential obedience. So what Paul is saying is your husband, he's charged with building this house, creating this household, breaking from his family, being the head spiritually, providing an atmosphere where growth is going to occur, and you make sure that you respect what he's doing. What we're talking about here is a woman, at least in our day and age, who has voluntarily submitted to this relationship. In 2019, nobody can say that a woman is forced into a marriage. Here is a woman who's making the choice. She's voluntarily submitted. And what she's going to do is to respect his work in creating that godly home. When you have a husband who doesn't lead or a wife who doesn't support, that glue bond can never come together. It's never going to work. Because what God is saying is the plan for a man and a woman is the exact same format that we see with Jesus and the church. There is nothing that is to separate that, and if something does, it's something that's going to be taken eternally serious. And that's how a strong marriage is built. Now, what we understand in this is that in theory, we can get it. In theory, we see what a man's to do. We see what a woman's to do. In theory, we understand that they can come together. But what we find within marriage is that there are many things that can stress that glue, that can stress that bond. And so this is why God is so serious in saying both individuals, when they are no longer individuals but come together as one, they must work as hard as they can to not allow these stressors to interfere with the kind of relationship that they want to have. Now, what is one of the biggest stresses that's put on marriage?
Well, it's children. Let me get this going here. I'm pressing my button too quickly. Children can do that. I want to read to you. I don't know a lot about this guy. His name is Michael Johnson. And he did a study. And let me just read you a little bit of this study. He said, for around 30 years, researchers have studied how having children affects a marriage. And the results are conclusive. The relationship between spouses suffers once kids come along. Comparing couples with and without children, researchers found that the rate of the decline in relationship satisfaction is nearly twice as steep for couples who have children than for childless couples. In the event that a pregnancy is unplanned, the parents experience even greater negative impacts on their relationship. Now, this is my favorite part here. The irony is that even as the marital satisfaction of the new parents declines, the likelihood of them divorcing also declines. So, having children may make you miserable, but you'll be miserable together. That was the conclusion of Michael Johnson on this. I don't think there's any surprise that studies will show that children put stress on a marriage, but I do take a bit of issue with the negativity of that. How many good things are easy? Not many, right? Something that's worth doing and worthwhile and is going to have a long-lasting impact, rarely do you come away from it saying, well, this is just really easy to do. And that's why God has said, before those kids come along, you make sure you're solid as a couple. You make sure that you're together, that you're on the same page spiritually, that you're doing what I want you to do. Because what that's going to do is build a basis so that when the additional stress of new family members comes along, you've got a bond, and the kids are going to become in a sense, but the idea is you've got the husband and wife as the nucleus. They're what's holding everything together. So, that means we've got to be very careful when we make the decision to have children. One of the big problems is when you've got a missing in action parent. When you've got a man or a woman who is spending a lot of time away from home for whatever reason, maybe work-related, traveling a lot, whatever. But it's leaving one parent to kind of be the disciplinarian and the provider and taking care of the day-to-day. That's a very dangerous thing. I had a conversation with a young man just a couple of weeks ago. He texted me. He said, I got this job offer. It's going to pay me so much more than I'm making now. And he said, what do you think I ought to do? Don't you love those questions? What do you think I ought to do? Well, I know his situation. And I know his marriage bond is not very strong because both of them became Christians after they got married. And there's four children involved in this household. And he's going to leave her to take care of these children in a job that would require him to travel at least 2 weeks out of the month. I told him what I thought. I said, you're going to place too much stress on your marriage. You're going to make your wife stressed out all the time. And so I got a text back. He said, well, I talked to my wife. It's two against one. I don't guess I'll take it. So we sided together on that one, I suppose, his wife and I. That's a dangerous thing. When you're leaving one person to do the job of two, and probably I'm talking to someone in here this evening who's in that situation of being a single parent, and you're saying you got no idea what you're talking about, and I know that. But when there's two people involved and one is putting all of the pressure on the other, that is going to create a stress on that bond. If you're not very careful, there will be resentment and there will be bitterness toward the fact that both of you had this child, yet only one is taking care. So that's a danger. Let me also add with that, that sometimes you can have the over-attentiveness of a parent to a child that creates a stress on the bond of marriage. So here's a father, and he thinks he has the next greatest athlete that will ever grace the world's presence. And he's got this young man or young woman at the ball field, 12 months out of the year, every kind of team, every kind of practice, every kind.
Well, now let me ask you, what's going on in building the marriage bond? If you've got a parent who is giving this child really far too much attention, what's happening with the relationship of that marriage? Well, it's going to suffer. There's going to be a danger there with that. And I feel quite confident. I have seen some situations where there were marriages that were really being strained because one of the parents was spending so much time with the child that the other parent was feeling neglected. That can't be the case either. What we understand in this is that parents have got to make sure that they're working together here. Fathers have got to remember, Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, specifically told to fathers, train up your children, nourish them in the admonition of the Lord. Well, what's one of the ways your son or your daughter is going to learn what a good marriage looks like? It's up to you. You're to be modeling that to them. You're to show what a good marriage looks like and how a husband and wife are attentive to each other and how they work out their problems and how they get along and how they make decisions. And thus, if I'm out of the loop, if I'm gone way too much of the time, I'm not showing my children what it's all about. Let me also say this. And I guess this is a veteran educator's perspective after watching a whole lot of this all these years. Parents have got to learn how to tell kids no. I have seen in the years that I have taught a significant change. And I think part of this is because the United States has grown much more prosperous in the past few decades. That children are involved in everything possible. You have kids who will play high school athletics, and as soon as the season's over, you're on a club team, and as soon as it's over, you're on a city team. And I'm sorry if I'm hitting a little too close to home here, but I'm not backing down on this point. When your child is gone all the time, and you're gone all the time, what's going to happen to that marriage? A child is not going to be negatively impacted for missing some activity. I'm kind of picking on sports, but I know parents who've got their kids in horse riding lessons and swimming lessons and golfing lessons, all these different things. Sometimes you just got to say no. Because God doesn't want us spending all our time chasing a ball or chasing an activity. He wants a home structure where kids are learning from parents who are stuck like glue to one another, who love the Lord, whose atmosphere within that home is promoting godliness. That's how you remove the stress. But let me make this point just as equally. A bad home life will have a negative impact. If you've got parents who are bickering and fussing because one's always gone and the other is left with all the work, that is going to have a negative impact. Thus, it's lifestyle choices that Christians must make, and sometimes they will be highly unpopular. And sometimes your children will tell you, you just don't want me to be popular. You just don't want me to be a good athlete. You've got to weather the storm. Because if that marriage frays apart, everybody in the household suffers. That's where maturity comes in. And that's where parents must stand up and say, we're not going to allow anything, including the activities of our children, to bring us apart. Now, may I also say with that, take opportunities to bond. I'm not saying sit home 365 days of the year. I'm not saying don't play on a sports team. I'm not saying don't have other activities. But use those activities even to build a marriage bond. I figured up one year how many years I watched soccer games. It was kind of depressing, so I forgot the number. I don't remember right offhand. But there were a lot of nights
that my wife and I sat side by side. Lawn chairs, bleachers, blankets thrown all over us because you have a spring sport that's played in 20-degree weather. You're bundled up. Well, we seized the moment, right? Talked about our day. Talked about things we needed to do. Talked about our children, what we need to do with them. So even when you do get in a time as life gets busy, and the more children you have, the busier it is going to get, you seize the moment. You use the opportunities. Now, let's think about another stress that oftentimes is placed on marriage. And that's the stress of work. When we think about the situation we're in, and we'll deal with this a little bit more tomorrow night with how this can get out of control. But tonight I want to make the point that one of the goals we have in working, as we'll say, is to get ahead. We're trying to build wealth in our bank account, which is fine. We're trying to pay off the mortgage, which is fine. But getting ahead never ever means leaving your spouse behind. And it's awfully easy to kind of look at that elusive date out there somewhere when we finally turn the corner. And we say, well, if I'm ever going to make it there, then I've got to do all these things, and I realize it's going to take me away from my family many, many weeks out of the year, but one day. Well, what about all the days before that? What's that doing to the stress that's being placed on that marriage? And the point that I think all of us have to realize is that economic comfort is fine and good, but that always comes after marital comfort. That I never sacrifice my spouse so that one day we can have a bigger house or a nicer car, or go on vacations, or whatever we might want to fill in the blank there. But also on this topic of work, there's also very much the danger of, even if you're home, of being consumed by it. I don't know why sometimes people view Americans as being a little lazy. That is far from the case from the Americans I know. Everybody I know is always working, just as hard as they can. And in our modern times, we've created this situation that's made it even worse because we leave work and we got this thing in our pocket. And we're connected to work 24/7. We have people texting us. We've got people calling us. We've got people emailing us. And oftentimes what we do is we feel like, well, I got to take this. I've got to answer this. And so what's going on is maybe where there was a time when at 5 o'clock you went home, nobody from work could get in touch with you, at least very easily. Now it's just a matter of clicking, and I need this answered, I need you to deal with this. And we've got this job now that's lasting every day, all the time. What's that doing to our marriages? I wonder what the studies will show 30 years from now. When somebody is preaching and reads a statistic on the difference of marital satisfaction before and after cell phones, I think it'll be significant. I think some of it's already showing up. What I have to remember is this: my spouse wants me at dinner, not my work. My spouse doesn't want me texting constantly when I should be paying attention to her. So I have to be careful that I do not allow that to happen. Let me mention just one more. When we think about this idea of the stress that marriage can suffer because of work, Matthew tells us that the thorny soil is the kind of soil where the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke it out. You ever paid much attention to the second part of that? The deceitfulness of riches. I have a feeling this is part of what's being discussed. That what we're talking about this evening in these family relationships can be destroyed if we're not awfully careful about how we view our economics. Let me mention another stress here. Sometimes it can be our friends. Now, I want to say this at the outset of this point. I am convinced that both men and women need same-gender friends. I think it's true for men. I think it's especially true for women. I think I've seen that with my own wife. That at times we have been in churches where there just simply were not a lot of women her age. And she was fine. She was a trooper with that. But in congregations where there have been people she gets close to, I can tell a real difference there. Because women tend to have that need to express things to other women that men just can't understand. I think maybe to a lesser degree, men have that same kind of need with other men. Here's the point that we need to make, though. Those outside relationships must never, ever crowd out one spouse. That as I think about the associates that I have, I never let them to have priority over my relationship with my wife. So these times that I go out, these times that I'm talking to my friends, texting, all these different things, they're always secondary to my marriage. Now, here's the big problem that I think we see with this, is there's also a very great danger in opposite gender friendships. And while I strongly encourage men to have other men as friends and women to have other women as friends, I think we better exercise great caution when there's opposite gender friendships. Because it's awfully easy for you to start telling the lady next to you who's your friend how mad your wife made you last night. I don't know how many marriages have been torn apart by that, but a bunch. And what started out innocent enough becomes something that is not innocent at all. Now, how do you deal with that? When my wife and I got our cell phones, we made sure the other one knew the password. And so at any time, if I want to look at her phone or she wants to look at my phone, pick it up, type in the password, knock yourself out. Look at whatever you want on that. I don't ever want to have the kind of relationship where my wife wonders if I'm showing an undue interest in somebody who I'm calling just a good friend. We want to make sure that nothing like that is placing a stress on our marriage. Never, ever, ever, ever leave room for suspicion. If your wife asks you 15 questions about where you've been, answer 15 times politely. If your husband wonders where you were, you answer him politely. Because if you ever get a shred of suspicion, it's going to rip it apart. Sadly, I know of way too many firsthand examples of that. One more. When we think about stress, and this would really apply to most everything we've talked about tonight, we always complain about not having enough time. Oddly enough, we have the exact same days of the week everybody else who's lived on the face of the earth has had. Same amount of time. But yet we busy ourselves so much with things that if we're not very careful, what's going to happen is we may be spending lots of time on these other things, some of which we've even talked about tonight, but we're not spending time nourishing and cherishing. How does a relationship grow? By spending as little time together as you can? No. It's by allowing that time to be there, making the time, carving out the time, so that even though you may have a very busy life, you're there for your spouse. So here we have so many things. We think about children. We think about our workplace. We think about the relationships we have with others. We think about our use of time.
Every one of these has an extremely keen interest in whether or not my marriage is going to stay together, whether I am going to be stuck like glue. But before we close tonight, let me make this point. The exact same things we're talking about, talk about our relationship to Jesus. If we're the bride of Christ, are we supposed to be allowing things to break this bond? Of course not. Because this nourishing and this cherishing also requires time. And I tell you what, if our relationship with Jesus suffers, our relationship with our spouse will suffer also. Therefore, we've got to make sure that in everything in our household, Christ comes first. When the elders asked me to do this meeting, the topic they suggested is the one we're dealing with this week. Messages to young families. If I could leave one message, it's this one. If you'll put Jesus first in everything in your house, it's not going to be perfect. But it's going to be a whole lot better than it would be otherwise. Therefore, let's make sure that that marriage to Christ is intact. And then we're going to find that the family relationships in particular, as we're discussing this evening, our relationship with our spouse will hold tight as well. Marriage is not easy. But it's really, really good. I always tell young people who are single and worried about it, about being single, I say, enjoy the time you're in. You're going to get to do things now that you'll never get to do. There's one young man I've been talking to on and off about this. He so thinks he needs a wife by now. And I said, do you know you could get on a plane and go anywhere in the world and you don't have to answer to anybody about that? You can vacation wherever you want. There's good things about being single. And if you're here tonight, you've been sitting through this lesson and you're saying, why is he talking about this? I'm single. Don't put that down. There are lots of good single people doing lots of good work for the Lord as we speak. But marriage is good too. And when you get into a relationship where you've got two people who are so concerned about one another's spirituality that they'll do anything to help the other person get to heaven, it's going to be great. Don't ever think that because a problem or two comes up along the way that you need to just forget it. Nothing good is easy. And I can say the same thing about our relationship with Christ. It's not easy. No, it's easier. Jesus says, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. In comparison, it is. But as Christians, we're called on to do some pretty tough things. Stand when others won't. Serve when others won't. But what Jesus has done for us should show us beyond a shadow of a doubt what true love is all about. Where He's saying, I want you a part of my family so much that I'll lay my life down for it. That's love. And that's the love He's shown to each of us. I don't know this evening if there's anyone here who has not put on the name of Christ, who understands what to do. I suspect, yes, with a group this size. Let me ask you, what else can God do? He's given everything so that you can be a part of His family. And this evening He offers that invitation at least one more time to be buried in the waters of baptism, to allow the blood of His Son to wash your sins away. Or maybe you've got problems. You are a Christian, but you're allowing temptations to have a bad impact on you. If we can pray with you this evening about it, we'll do it. Whatever it takes, come to Jesus. Build that marriage bond with Him. And it will be a great blessing that you will never regret. If you need to respond to His invitation this evening, won't you come while we stand and sing together?